Hey, there you are. Welcome back. Welcome back to the Long Distance Love Bombs podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Jeremy Goldberg. Today's guest, the one and only Mr. Create the Love, Mr. Mark Groves. What a dude. What a dreamboat, eh? He's one of my dearest best friends, and in this episode, we just dive straight into high vibe, deep, vulnerable, philosophical rants and raves about life, healing, breakups, and a whole bunch of random stuff. It is a very energetic exchange, lots of big ideas. So, yeah. And if you dig this episode, I would encourage you to go back and find some others that are similar. The conversation specifically with Amy Young, Kelsey Grant, Connor Beaton, Vienna Farren, Sylvie Hukassian, they're all along the same vein, relationship stuff, transition, boundaries, communication, etc. Anyway, without further ado, here's some Mark Groves for your ear bones.
Yeah, this is like as loud as I'm going to talk.
I think this is about my talks volume. I might get excited about something. We know that's possible.
That's definitely happened.
You don't
before.
Get quite as much inflection.
Let's be real. There is the Mark Groves.
If I get mad or upset or excited, yeah, there's about a 47 decibel range.
That's like what, 15% increase?
Yeah, I think we're good right now. This feels good. I probably won't get much louder in this.
Famous last words.
I can't imagine that I will.
Should we just start?
I think that seems like a good idea.
Well,
this time I'm on yours though, right?
Yeah. This is going to be
for yours or for mine?
Yeah.
Oh. Last time it worked out well for me.
It did, yeah. We got to this stage and then you're like, what do you want to talk about? And I'm like, but I'm the host.
I'm like, I think you have a funny idea of how a podcast works. It's called the Mark Groves Podcast.
Remember you got your microphones out and stuff? And I was like, yeah, he's such a nice host. He's so welcoming.
To set up for mine. That's so nice of him.
Yeah. All right. Where do you want to start?
I mean, weren't we starting at endings? That's ironic.
Should we just start now?
I think we should start now. Or we already started.
Mark Groves, welcome to the podcast.
Jeremy Goldberg, I'm so grateful to be on your podcast again.
Again?
Yep. It's like
second time.
Yeah, which is usually better than the first time. That's ideal. I know when I lost my virginity the second time was for sure better than the first time.
You lost your virginity twice.
It felt like it. This mean, I think if you wait long enough too to have sex again, you regrow it anyways.
That's exactly where I thought we would start.
Let's start with that. That seems like a good way to begin.
Yeah, I mean, virginity, penises. But you said let's start at the end. So since I talked to you a year ago, what's been going on?
A year ago? Well, I mean, we've had conversations, but you mean in the podcast.
I talked to you about 20 minutes ago.
But yeah, we had a burrito together. I mean, my relationship status shifted. I was going to say drastically, but I guess it's either happening or not happening.
I mean, you should know that there's a whole spectrum now.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Are we friends? Are we friends with more? We were in a relationship, and now I'm no longer in a relationship.
How does that feel?
Oh, man, there's a spectrum of feelings associated with that. I mean, you're catching me 3 months post-breakup. Well, maybe almost 3 months. So, you know, the range of grief or the five stages of grief that we sort of go through with all endings, they're not linear. So it's sort of like, hey, I got my stuff figured out. Oh, no, I don't. Oh, I'm through it. No, I'm not.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm in a world of both ands, a lot of them, that I'm like both sad, both excited, both angry. You know, a lot of those things.
Even like, I mean, my experience, it's like hour to hour. It's like, man, I love being alone. This is fucking awesome. And then, oh, I'm really lonely. In like 10 minutes later.
Yeah, it has brought me to a place that's different in terms of my relationship to, I think because I didn't expect to be here. You know, I didn't expect, and it reminded me that that is how life works, that you end up where you do not expect to be. And as much as I think we believe that we can corral life or choose it or manipulate it or whatever, that the universe just has a way of doing what it needs to do, and I have accepted that it needed to do this for me, for her, for I mean, there's really no other way to look at it. The other way to look at it is to hope for me to be in a different place that I'm not in, and that's instantly going to be a place of pain.
Yeah, the alternative is to battle reality.
Which we all do, you know. It's not like my mind doesn't go to, like, what would life be like had we stayed together? But that doesn't allow me to be present, and it really has shotgunned me into, you know, experiencing this ending has been the processing of endings, of like, really brought me face to face with death, which is weird, you know. I never expected it to bring me to this sort of confronting mortality.
How's it brought you towards death?
I think it made me sit within myself so much into the, what is the present moment? That I think love and relationship is really also a bit of a distraction from our existential crisis that we all will die. And children, part of us still lives on through children. And I don't have children, you know, as much as maybe I do somewhere, but I, not that I know of. And that's probably a bad joke, but you know what I'm saying.
I liked it.
But I really think that that is, you know, where love, it becomes this.
Like your legacy, like your genetic legacy of sorts?
Yeah, and also a beautiful distraction from, you know, it's almost like a form of existential escapism. Like that we are not, if you actually sit with the possibility that you will die, which you will, that's an enormous thing to bear. It's an enormous thing to confront and to sit in the loop of, you know, you and I talked about this on my podcast, that like to sit in the loop of trying to process everything that's actually happening in this planet, that we are humans spinning around on a sphere in the middle of a solar system, where, as you said, half of us are upside down at any given time, and we don't even know which side that is. That's
For someone else, we're upside down right now. It's crazy.
It's crazy.
Why don't we ever talk about that?
But I think that's like when you meet endings or bottoms or whatever it is, you are thrust into confronting death, because all things are that end or deaths of sorts. So we can either turn towards that or numb out and distract. And, you know, you and I are both sober.
Yeah.
You know, I don't drink, I don't smoke weed. And I don't have any way to escape the pain and the emotion.
Well, of course you do.
I mean, I have Netflix. That's true.
You've got Instagram. You've got fitness. You've got nature. You've got...
Okay, yeah. So I have lots of things that I could do.
A chemical, perhaps.
I don't have anything that can really remove me from my body like alcohol and drugs can do. I can get more embodied through fitness. Instagram or any digital process can actually take me outside of my... Sure, that can take me outside of myself.
But so you're forced to really confront the death of the relationship and all of its associated feelings.
Yeah, the futures I imagined, the potentialities. What is my new potential? You know, like now it becomes this enormous amount of possibility that is also, in a way, quite confronting, because then it's like, whoa, how does one choose amongst so much choice?
How do you?
I think
like what guides your decision-making processes when it's, you know, entirely wide open?
When it's a blank canvas.
Yeah. It's like, how do you choose the color?
Right?
Like, how do you choose the brush? Like, what do I want to paint?
I think paying attention to the nudges. You know, I have... Despite every reason to want to like busy myself and be around people, and that was me, you know, I was extroverted, and I am not extroverted now, which is for the first time in my life.
Yeah, I feel like I've noticed a shift in you more. I feel like you're more, I don't want to say thoughtful, but perhaps more introverted might be the word. More in search of solitude or aloneness. I feel like you've cultivated aloneness in a way that I hadn't seen before, because you're such an outgoing social butterfly of sorts. And I know that after your split, you did things very consciously to go and step away from social media, the internet. You like rented a cabin in the woods. You reflected a whole lot. You sat with all of the sensations.
I think I'm coming to the reality that I have distracted myself with people for a long time. You know, one of my survival strategies as a kid was to be entertaining, to make people laugh, to make it so they couldn't see really how I felt often, which was sad, or like
it was a mask, right?
Like I didn't know what was actually happening. I mean, no one actually fucking knows what is happening, but there's a weird, because we have shame with that, that there's like a that we're afraid of being seen as vulnerable. And this breakup has made it so I don't have a choice. Like my energy levels are oddly, I can't be around people who are energy vampires. They like deplete me very quickly. So I don't have a choice. Like I can tell that if I don't, I'm going to lose my mind. You know, like my boundaries have to be so solid, because as soon as I sort of go past it, I can feel myself resenting them, which has nothing to do with them and everything to do with me. And so I have to get very intentional with all of it. I've started to really think about, like, I think my line of what was normal or possible or extroversion, or who I am, was so far past actually my line of energetic need of isolation and protection. I was so used to like contribution and giving that I didn't even know that I lost myself even further back. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I actually went to a body worker. I think is that the word?
I mean,
like a somatic mm-hmm. body worker, woman, lady, and she asked me this great question, which was when. Or like, how do you know that the way you're living and behaving and being is not an adaptation that you learned early on in childhood? And how do you distinguish that from who you truly are? And I was like, oh, shit.
You're like, let me just answer that in a couple seconds.
But like, such an interesting question, right? Of we were trying to tease out who I really am before I learned to be Jeremy, before I learned to be a son, before I learned to be a brother. And that one's just been ruminating in my head for the last day or so. Like, I don't know the answer to that. But I think the process of trying to discover the answer to that is where the work lies, so to speak. And I think you described it similarly, of like a gradient or a spectrum that you shifted past yourself into this too social, perhaps, or like hiding mask, humorous version of yourself that was like an adaption from the past. And now you're kind of recalibrating your heart or your soul to who you truly are.
Yeah. I mean, that resonates. And I feel like because I have embraced death now, like I have.
What does that mean to you? Like embrace.
Well, when death. I first went down the rabbit hole in the cabin, in the woods, in solitude, I sat in a room in the cabin thinking like, okay, I'm human living on a planet. I'm part of a species. I can't even make this make sense. Like it's too much to process. I feel like my brain's going to fracture. Mm. And I was like, I'm going to die one day. Like confront, like that thought just kept going through my mind. And I was like, I got to go to sleep. Like that was the only answer to that at the time, because it was overwhelming. It was overwhelming. And I went to sleep and I woke up just grateful to be breathing, to be there. And over the process of the last 3 months, but I would say it was about a month after that, that I fell asleep thinking this could be my last night. Like imagine if I just dissolved and died. And I was at peace. And I woke up again grateful that I was not dead. And I know this might sound heavy or whatever, but it's the truth. And in confronting that and accepting it, now nothing's off limits. Now, like, I gotta tell you, I could give a shit about someone's opinion now. Like, if the opinion contributes to making me a better human, I do care. But if it's just one of those opinions that everybody, I mean, I don't care. If you don't like that I swear, I don't care. If you don't agree with everything I say, I don't care, because I sometimes don't agree with everything I say. That's the beauty of evolving and growing and learning. And that's why I think the acceptance of death, one, makes it so you don't have to numb it anymore. Mm. Like, I now have no desire to drink.
It's the weirdest, right? How's it been for you?
Like, it's exactly. It's like, I don't even desire it. Once I made the commitment, because I was like, okay, there's something deeper beyond this. And then with marijuana, it was the same thing. You know, it was like that one. I mean, it took a bit of a 2x4 to the head to learn that one. But it was, again, like, now that I haven't done it, life is so much more delicious. Like, you and I were talking about this the other day, that oddly, like, when I did it last, I was thinking to myself, I actually prefer life not anesthetized by this or whatever it is. And I think eventually I think it was Brandon Collingsworth who said this to me, that eventually you vibrate higher than the medicine. Like, it needs to pull you up when you're using, but eventually when you pull yourself up, it actually brings you down. And that was the best verbalization of my experience of them.
Yeah. And for me, it was a grand sort of realization that, like, I really love life. I really love the present moment.
I love it.
I love the clarity associated with knowing that my brain is operating to its highest potential in any given moment.
I needed all my brain for this breakup.
Yeah.
Like, I needed it because I was in the depths.
And you're doing it in a very unusual situation whereby you have, like, 500,000 people that are, like, observing your thoughts and experiences.
Yeah. I mean,
on Instagram.
You don't get the privilege of going to the club and dancing on a speaker and taking a chick home, you know, which is a privilege. That's not a privilege. That's but, you know, it's kind of that idea that ignorance is bliss. I mean, truly it is bliss, because when you pay attention and you know something, you can no longer do it without the cost of pain. And I can no longer have those behaviors because I know they're not contributing to my health and my healing. And
how did you balance the internal needs versus, like, the expectations of others or your followers or like the public in general? Or was it just entirely self-focused and, like, fuck what they think? This is my life.
Yeah, there was a line of, like, privacy and transparency. The number one thing that was most important to me was Kai feeling honored in the process, that, like, how I shared honored us and our shared experience. That really mattered to me, because it was important that this relationship come to a romantic close with grace. And
like, honoring that it was special and sacred and meaningful. And
I mean, the best, right? That's what makes it so fucking hard, is...
And that you don't owe anybody anything.
No, and someone else's fucking opinion about how I should handle it, or what I should say to the public, or what my relationship ending means for them. I mean, I don't give a shit. Like, don't place hope in me. Like, you can look to me for advice or thoughts, but I'm not your God. I'm not your... Don't put me on a pedestal. I'm not your guru. Like, I'm just a guy who's also in the midst of this experience, who just happens to write about it and think about it and say, like, hey, I might be a chapter ahead in some areas, but I'm also a chapter behind. And also, just because I know how to communicate and I'm doing the best I can, you know, sometimes relationships are meant to end. And that, I think in a lot of ways, that was sort of like one of the most beautiful aspects of this experience, is you can do everything quote unquote right and still it just not fit for whatever reason, for either person or for both people or for one or for the other. But if it doesn't work for one, it doesn't work for the other. You know, if it's not a hell yes for you, it's not a hell yes for me. That's a qualifier of a hell yes.
And a lot of people, though, try to force that and accept less than a hell yes and call it good. But then you're not honoring your partner and you're not honoring yourself. Like, you deserve more than a sacrificial hell yes.
Exactly. Yeah. And for someone to feel like they have to stay because they're afraid to hurt me or afraid of honoring themselves, like, I never would want someone to be in a relationship at all, but with me especially, if it meant on some level they had to believe something was wrong with them because they couldn't choose it. You know, and that was really like a conversation that we had, which I was like, there's nothing wrong with you. Like, just because you can't choose this relationship doesn't mean there's something wrong with you. You can just not want to choose it. And that actually is enough.
Yeah.
And that's weird to say when you're in a relationship with someone, because it required that I remove, in a way, the outcomes that I wanted, which was be together. I had to remove that in order to honor her. And I think the only way I could do that was because when I had an engagement that ended when I was 27, I had to end a relationship with a really amazing woman, and I didn't know why, and I didn't have any reason. Like, it was so tough. But I had to betray, sort of quote unquote, her and the story I'd been taught to choose myself. And that's why I could turn towards someone else and say, you have to do this. Like, this isn't about me. I'll be fine. Because, you know, I've done enough work to know that a relationship not working out, if I'm showing up as a good human and doing the best I can, it has nothing to do with my worthiness that someone can't choose me. I never would have been able to separate that 5 years ago.
Yeah, like, your level of knowledge around this subject has perhaps prepared you best to deal with this thing. You know what I mean? Like, you know more about relationships than most everybody. Did you find yourself...
An endless education.
Yeah, and life experiences, of course. Like, broken hearts, broken engagements.
Yeah.
Which was more helpful, do you think? Was, like, the past experiences or the intellectual knowledge of how it all functions?
Experience, always. You know, the experience builds the knowledge. You know, it constructs the wisdom as well as books.
Yeah.
But I would say the ability, the desire for someone to have held my heart in the fear of betraying someone else. I was not met with grace generally when I ended my engagement. For obvious reasons, by my ex-fiance, because we were 27 and I was like, we just moved in together. We just got engaged 3 months before. Like, she had every reason to not be excited about my new choice.
Yeah.
So I understand that. But a lot of people I was close with, my best friends held me, but that was not true of a lot of people. There was a judgment that I was afraid to grow up. I was afraid of commitment. I had Peter Pan syndrome. You know, I think this is such an irony. It's like, we want men who are emotionally intelligent and can talk about their feelings. But what I thought was so fascinating was the moment I actually really stood in the truth of what I felt, even though it didn't make sense, I was then told by mostly women, no, all women, that I didn't actually feel the way I felt, that I was wrong, that I was afraid of commitment, and that it was something wrong with me. But I knew in my soul that there was nothing wrong with me, but the shame, you know, and the impact. And so that education is what opened me up to wanting to learn about relationships. So, you know, it's the greatest blessing in the world. But at the end of the day, I think it was the best training camp to be in a moment where someone felt something similar to what I felt then, and to be able to say,
I've been there.
You can go, like, and I'll be okay. And you have to choose this because I know what it's like. You're going to get sick. You're going to be ill. And this might propel you into a place that is life-changing. It will propel you into a place because it will propel me into a place.
What was that line? So we were just in Edmonton for a couple of days speaking at Selena Gray's event. Somebody, maybe it was you, that said rejection is saving you from mediocrity.
Yeah, that was me.
That's so good. It's a good line. You.
Well, it's the only way to view it. You know, as you say, rejection is redirection. But I really do think, and that's true always, but you don't know when you're in it.
Yeah.
You know, this has really compelled me to want to write something about, you know, sometimes life just doesn't make sense. And
I would say all the time.
Yeah.
If you give it enough time and space, like, life
you always get
never
there.
Makes fucking sense.
Well, the fact that we're actually talking on a fucking microphone with computers and shit, and people from around the world are going to hear this.
Yeah.
That alone is mind boggling.
It's crazy.
We fly in planes. I'm drinking kombucha. I don't even know how this got made, but it tastes good. Thanks to Fino kombucha.
We just paid somebody to make us food.
A burrito.
Yeah.
Oh, man. You used to have to live in a different part of the world to get a burrito before.
Yeah.
Like, that all is mind-blowing.
Yeah.
And I think when you can realize that the answer you seek is sometimes not in a book, it's sometimes not going to make sense. And
yeah,
like you're not going to be able to find the answer. And that is how we cultivate self-trust.
Mm-hmm.
That's how, is you listen to the calls. And yeah, that's why I like the next, the blank canvas, is I'm just going to listen to the calls. And right now the calls say, slow the fuck down, shut the fuck up. You know, like, be on your own. Oop. Be by yourself.
And like, but we don't like that answer, right?
I didn't at first, but then I got friends like you who are like, hey, what are you afraid of? And I'm like, ah, fuck, I gotta go to a cabin without any cell phone.
Yeah, but like, we know the answer deep down, but we just don't like that answer.
And so we pretend we don't know it.
Right, so we read more books, or we go to more workshops, or we say, what do you think? What do you think? What should I do? And deep down, you know.
All the books, God, all your religions, our religions, whatever.
Yeah.
They all say the exact same thing.
Yeah.
You know, you are, I am, is what the Christian church says. God is I am. You are God. Mm-hmm. You know. You are connected to the threads of the universe. And when you actually let go of this idea that you think you have control over everything, and instead you follow the flow, you know, and I think that's such a learned thing, because we are taught to not follow the flow. We are taught to let go of really important parts of ourselves to fit in. And man, that seems to be the work. It's so fucking weird to call it the work.
Yeah.
Is actually forgetting everything you've been taught.
Yeah, the learning is actually the unlearning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like you said earlier, before you learned you were Jeremy, you know, before you, like, we just have a name. Like, my name is Mark.
Yeah.
But the really below that, there is, that gives me some sense of calm and peace, because I'm Mark.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not. I'm an entity. I'm there's something coming out of me, of this meat bag, that is got a voice and a thought process and a personality. And
It's wild. I was just at Buddy Wakefield's show last night.
Yeah.
And he has this line about, and I'm going to butcher it, but the gist is, if we all got decapitated right now, we would still have to deal with what's left behind. Like, it's still in us. Like, I could lose my arms, my legs, but like, everything's just in my brain. Like, the way that I see reality, it just exists in between my ears. It's wild.
I think it is a fascinating, almost juxtaposition, that the personality of self, the self, doesn't age, right? Like, my soul isn't 41. My body is, I mean, my body's like 32, but really maybe it's 41. Yeah, yeah.
You look good.
Yeah, thanks, brother. My hairline is 41, though. But yeah, the and that seems to be an inherent conflict, is that the soul doesn't age, but the body does.
Mm.
And so how do we come to peace or terms with the fact that you are imperfect, that your body is imperfect, your thoughts are imperfect?
The other thing that trips me out is that the past, regardless of how long ago it actually happened, feels the same. So something that happened to me yesterday versus something that happened to me when I was a child, when I go to those places in my mind and relive those past experiences, they feel relatively the same.
They feel on the same time spectrum.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's, it's not like a
filing cabinet,
a weird 27-year memory versus a one-day memory.
I'm like, oh, that past memory feels like a long time ago. No, it just feels like, oh, there it is.
I remember having dinner with this guy who is, you know, he like talks in tons of circles about time. It's not Connor Beaton. It's another guy.
Do I know the guy?
But the guy was saying that, imagine if you just let go of the thought that time was linear.
Mm.
And you just imagine that time was laid out like a football field. That literally right now, all of the moments are happening flat out, right? And I was starting to think, like, imagine if a memory, because we really cling to memories that are painful. Like, you know, I can remember sitting on a paddleboard when there was a humpback whale by me. That's a little bit different, right? I'm sort of bridged to a memory that feels joyous.
Mm.
Not quite as common. Us humans, we like to marinate in the shit.
Mm.
But I was thinking, like, if you haven't fully learned from a past experience, there's almost like parts of you are still threaded on the football field to these other moments.
Like strings to
the ground? Yes, yeah. So you're sort of like spread out in all these moments and never quite here, because you haven't taken those other moments and implemented the wisdom that is inherent in all pain. You know, like, it's weird to say this, but I mean it. I am so grateful for the depths of my pain for the last 3 months. Like, I've been thrust into my heart and grief and anger and love and joy and excitement and possibility, and all of it has been so delicious. And I'm so grateful to have gone through this breakup. It has been such a gift to feel so much more. Like, I thought I was paying attention before. But I don't know that I really was. Like, now I can sit in this moment and I can be like, this moment is the one we know. Like, I never used to think that way. Like, and when you're completely sober, there's nothing pulling you out of it. And that, like, connection to me is the most important thing. I think it's the most important thing to everyone, regardless of whether they agree or not. I'm just going to say that. Yeah. That, like, deep in the human experience or spiritual experience is the need to love. And that somehow does transcend the experience of mortality. That love feels like it's eternal. And just because my relationship with Kylie ended, the love I have for her is eternal. It doesn't end. Like, it doesn't end the day the relationship ends. It just changes its container. And that's different. You know, I think we often want to, like, cut off or sever the love we have for past partners or people who hurt us. But there's a difference between unconditionally loving someone and tolerating something or agreeing to something. And the last thing I ever want to do is hold some sort of righteous indignation and anger towards someone because they chose themselves. Like, that...
someone that loved you for years, that made you better.
That literally... I've never experienced so much transformation. And together, you know? And without her, you know, I can't... I don't know another possibility. But... yeah, like, I'm such a better human because of her, and that makes it worth it, because it prepares me. There's always something greater unfolding, and I know that. And I, as a younger person, I didn't have that perspective. That when a relationship ended, I didn't, you know, walk out of my devastating breakup at 19 and drive. I drove home fast, of course, because I was sad. And you should drive fast when you're sad, because that really proves how mad you are.
With tears in your eyes.
And tinted windows and a subwoofer.
What were you listening to?
Probably Notorious Big. Or Green Day, you know, Dookie or something. Oh, maybe Offspring, actually.
Back on track.
But so Offspring is blaring and I'm driving fast. But the first question I did not ask myself was, what is the gift in this lesson? It was, holy fuck, like, my life, will I ever be okay again? And then I probably played some sort of sad music just to marinate in it. And now...
and, like, we've all been there with our first breakup, right? Or our first grieving experience where a loved one dies. It feels as if the carpet has been pulled out from under you. That your life is over, the world as you know it will never be the same. And all of those things are true.
Yeah.
And life goes on. And you learn from it, and it makes you better.
And who, you know, we're not taught to ask those questions, you know, like, I've only learned through life experience, and I don't even know where that thought process finally made it into my life as a tool, but I do remember the moment that I first had it, which was, I went through a breakup with a girl I dated for 3 months, and I literally knew we were going to break up. I, like, drove to her house. I had some granola mixed with some yogurt in a container, and I put it at the on the floor of my car to go in and get dumped, because I knew it was about to.
I'll eat this when I get back.
Yeah, I was like, this will be here. I'll be back in like 12 minutes. And I left, we broke up, got dumped, essentially got back in the car, ate my food, and went to the gym. And I remember thinking, like, immediately, what's the gift in this experience? What did she teach me? What has this taught me? I never used to do that. And that is, when you can start to look at life that way, it changes everything. It changes from this, like, this is just fate and life just happens to us and we're all just this species that lives on this planet and nothing's actually that special, yeah. to everything is by design if you listen.
And it's all just happening regardless of whether you want it to happen or not. And I think to echo your question about like what can I learn from this, right? The answers will keep unfolding. So after 10 minutes after your breakup, you might learn life fucking sucks. You're like, yeah, it's a great lesson. Sometimes that's true.
That is,
yeah. And an hour or a day or a week after, you might have a different answer and a different answer. And another lesson unfolds. And now we're 3 months after your breakup and they're still coming. Like, you're still learning.
Oh, man, like a week and a half ago, I was talking to Connor on the phone. And I just had a sobbing breakdown. And I was like, I actually don't remember the last time I was this sad. Mm. And then that happened again on like, that was a Friday. That happened again on like the Sunday. And then I was good. I had a sense of peace and calm. And I know that those are sort of, this sounds so fucked up, but it was such a delicious moment to be so sad, mm. to like let that come out of me. And to not judge it, to be like...
Because we push it away all the time. Like, I don't want to feel sad. I can't cry. This means I'm bad. This means I'm a wuss. I'm not a man. And then you experience the thing, and it's just relief. Like, oh, it was a good cry.
I was snotty. Yeah. And he just sat there, and he was like...
Yeah, you're good.
Yeah, like, there was no... And, you know, most of the time, you know, dudes are like, oh, yeah, man.
Yeah, like, chin up.
Yeah, you're... Hey, did you see the game? Because we're so uncomfortable because we don't know how to sit in our own feelings. Mm-hmm. So we don't know how to hold those feelings for other people. And that's true of all genders. That's not just true of men. I think it's just more true for men.
Perhaps as well, you felt a sense of safety or that you were held in that moment that allowed you to go to that place that you've been resisting. Like, hey, I'm talking to Connor. He loves me. He's a good dude. I feel safe here. So let's actually dive into that hurt that I've not really been looking at.
Yeah, like I remember when I was 25-ish and my girlfriend had some sort of emotional affair / possibly physical. There will never be enough evidence to prove either of those. Well, we know the first one's true. Anyways, I did not tell any of my friends because I had so much shame.
Shame.
I had shame that this woman had done this to me, that I had... And then I wanted to work it out. Mm. You know, like I had shame about that, so I didn't want them to find out about that because then they'd be like, well, why do you want to work it out? Like, you're not that happy anyways. You know, like all those.
Yeah, man. Been there. Got the t-shirt to prove it.
Fuck that t-shirt. I got a few of those. Different sizes, too.
Colors, all of them. So funny to look back and be like, what were you doing, younger Jer?
Oh, man. I remember I thought... Oh, man. I wrote this article that was called Why I Wish You Would Cheat on Me. And then the idea was that I was in this relationship I didn't want to be in anymore, but I didn't want to leave it because there was no reason to leave it. Right. So then I just took her for granted.
Well, like the reason
and pushed
to leave
her away.
It, but the reason to leave it, of course, is that you want to leave it.
Exactly. But I was living by the unconscious constructs of society that say you should just be in a relationship because that's what you're supposed to do. And God forbid you want one that has elation.
Yeah. This is just how it is. Like, you get married and then you stop having sex and you hate
each other. You shouldn't have fun
anymore.
You fight
all the time.
Yeah. Like, if they're a good person, like... God, and you see that all the time on comments to posts I do where people say, like, divorce is the easy way out, you know, people give up so easy these days. And, you know, all spectrums of relationship are true. All of those are true. Sometimes divorce is the easy way out. Sometimes divorce is the impossible, most painful way out. Mm-hmm. And so it is never my job to judge or choose for someone else what they should do because I don't know what it's like to be in your internal narrative. I don't know what it was like to grow up in your home. I don't know what it's like to be in your home. I don't know what it's like to share a conversation with your partner. And for me to even project what I think you should do, if you're in an abusive relationship, you should leave and seek help. There's no doubt about that.
100%.
But other than that, you can do whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah.
And that is the truth. And I hate that we weaponize religion to shame that. We weaponize our judgments in society and parents.
Well, just socially as well, right?
We shame the divorced, and because we shame relational endings because we're afraid of death, you know, because we're afraid of endings. Yeah. We don't like endings, and we're afraid that other people are going to feel the pain and impact of them, so we stay together for kids.
And we're scared to accept that our own relationship might end, that our own friends might die, and so we avoid and subconsciously push away from others that want to engage us in that discussion.
Exactly. And that was an agreement that Kai and I always had in our relationship. She had been divorced before. Don't worry, anyone listening, I'm not sharing anything that I don't have permission to share.
She talks about that very publicly.
Yeah, of course. And because there was this giant fear of being trapped in relationship, the agreement that we explicitly had was our relationship would never be a prison. You know, I said to her, we both can come and go.
Like, you can leave at any time.
And that is true anyways. But the acknowledgement of that means we show up every day because you choosing me is actually a fucking privilege. Mm-hmm. It is. You could choose anybody and you choose me. What a beautiful gift to give your exclusivity. And so I should do the work to maintain that so I'm still someone worth like providing back and you doing the same.
Yeah.
Not that if they choose to not choose you, that you're unworthy of being chosen. Like, my worthiness doesn't sit in her choice, but my effort sits in it.
Yeah. And I think recognizing from both sides that either of you could leave at any time sort of facilitates this idea that, like, you want them to stay. You earned them, right? Like, if you want somebody to stay, you need to treat them like you want them to stay.
Yeah, and because we do this till death do us part.
Yeah.
What death? The death of the part of you that chose them? The death of, is it a mortal death? Is it a, you know?
Yeah. It's like, well, you're going to be here till one of us dies, so I can just take my foot off the gas and just, like, you know, take you for granted.
I was sitting at this hair salon once. I'll never forget this. Have I told you this?
I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't have that many hair salon stories, but this one, I was sitting there and it was at a, like, someone who has a hair salon in their basement. Okay. And so there's like only four people in there, right? And I'm sitting there and the one woman says to the other one, well, I just got married, so like I never have to give him a blowjob again. Mm-hmm. And like, I can't help myself. I have thoughts and opinions that just happen to come out of my mouth.
I know.
And yeah, and literally I just say what most people think, yeah, or they don't think, but whatever. And I was like, no, actually you still should. And she was like, no, like we're married. And I was like, yeah, but that thinking right there is you believe you have him, yeah, because you're married. And then you're going to be upset when he cheats on you or leaves you because you have actually castrated intimacy from the relationship. Mm. And this happens on both sides. You don't have, yeah, to leave a relationship to leave a relationship. You can leave it and still be in it. Mm-hmm. And then this comes back to that thought of like my article that was why I wish you would cheat on me, is we often would prefer someone would cheat on us because then we have a reason to leave them and it won't be our fault. We'll have like, they are flawed, see why I left, but we actually created that instead of, I feel like we do this a lot.
Well, there's power in being the victim, right?
Oh, immense power. And then you now have society's approval that you should leave.
Like, that asshole. Exactly. Let me shower you with attention and praise and comfort.
When I think this is really the shift that is maybe one of the most key shifts you'll ever make in your life, is going from having to do something to choosing to do something. Like, if I have to leave a relationship or have to have a conversation, I've waited till my back's against the wall or I've created circumstances that force me to do something that I already intuitively know I likely need to at least bring forward. Mm. When you shift to choose to, your life is, you're moving like the decision tree way further back. So if it's like, I feel disconnection, I don't want to have the conversation. I'm going to wait till we have a blow up or I drink or they're mad or they cheat or they leave or they whatever.
It's where you can't ignore it any longer.
Exactly. As where like just the nudge. I feel like I'm not drawn to you right now or anymore or whatever the word is. It doesn't matter. We even shame that.
Yeah.
But then it's like curiosity and expressing that. I mean, that's what a vow is I promise to bring forward the things that are coming up for me. Make that fucking vow at your wedding and then you'll see your relationships last. Mm. You know, but then even in saying that the marker of your relational success is not length always. That's only a very minimal marker of relationship success. There are people together 75 years who fucking hate each other. Mm-hmm. So that's relational status is not an indicator of relational success. You can go to the depths in a week with someone way more than people have done in their whole lives. Mm-hmm. And that is, that's the gift of relationship today.
Yeah, I just imagine this like old man on a porch that's never left his hometown, but he lived to like 100. And everyone's like, wow, what a great life.
Yeah.
And you're like, but he has no friends. He has no memories. He's not done anything. Like, yeah, but he lived to 100. Yeah. It's the same thing with marriage.
100 of the
it's
same like, fucking years.
It's like, oh, they've been married for 60 years. Like, yeah, but they're miserable.
And they don't even like each other.
Yeah, but they've made it to 60 years. Somehow that's better than like a very healthy, transformative one-year relationship.
And that in essence is what steers why we say stuck. And I think what's so fascinating about us as humans, because certainly no other species does this, is we build prisons ourselves that aren't even real. We are surrounded by walls that don't exist. Like, that is so fascinating to me, that you can want something so bad, like leaving a job or starting it and or going on a vacation or like going back to school, and we wait till our relationship ends and then we pursue our dreams. Mm-hmm. And I see so many people who wake up in their 40s or 50s or 60s, and God forbid you're in your 60s and 70s and you think, I'm too old now. No, you're fucking not.
Or in your 20s or 30s.
Oh, and they're like, oh, I already got married and I did this. You can choose your way out of anything you choose your way into. Except for a child. You can't choose your way out of that one. Now,
well, you could.
I mean, you could. But the real, I think, important thing to recognize in this conversation that we have about staying together for children is that anyone who is the child of parents who stayed together for children will say, fuck them for staying together.
Yeah.
And often the parent then develops resentment to the child because they blame them. Mm-hmm. And it's not the child's fault. It's, look, the way you handle yourself and conflict will teach your child so much more than your relationship status will. Mm-hmm. And
I actually have an interesting perspective on this as a kid of divorce.
Yeah.
And from age 6 to like 8 or 10 or whatever, yeah, it was hard, challenging.
Did they handle it with grace?
No.
Yeah.
But I love them and they did the best they could. Asterisk. Yeah. If you're listening, mom or dad, like, you know, you did all right. And like, it's a hard thing. And I was talking to my sister, I should step back actually. They did handle with grace, although there was punctuated moments of emotion and like heartache that I think could have been dealt with better.
That you were exposed
to. Upon reflection now. Yeah. Like, it was the early 80s, and they were like 20.
Hey, this isn't judgment. Like, this is just facts.
Facts. Yeah. So, like, fuck me up a bit. And my sister. And that's okay. Like, nobody escapes unscathed. But we were having a chat maybe 5 years ago, and we had agreed that our parents getting divorced was one of the best things to ever happen to us.
Mm.
Because what happened was, my dad got remarried and I got a stepmom who loves me and helped raise me. Then they had a set of twins. So I got a brother, a sister, a stepmom, my stepmom's parents. I got a bunch of grandparents. My mom got remarried. So I got a stepdad. Then she had a kid. So I got another sister plus two more stepbrothers plus step grandparents. So I got like a dozen bonus people who
That's
loved
pretty dope.
And
yeah.
cared about me. And I can't imagine doing life without my siblings. And it only came across because they chose to get divorced. And so I've had this conversation with many individuals through the years who are in that place of like, well, we're going to stay together until they're 18 or until they go off to college or, you know, another 5 years to tolerate it. And I try to gently offer the other perspective, which is, the divorce might actually be the most powerful and beneficial and loving thing that you can choose to do for your children, because it means that you're valuing yourself. And like, two parents who are separately kicking ass and taking names that love their lives is way better.
Oh my God.
Than two parents
so much
smushed
better.
Together in a house, bickering and fighting and being uncomfortable and tense all the time. So that's my little rant about that.
Oh, I agree. I feel like it actually goes like, of course, the ideal scenario is two parents together who love each other.
Right.
Then it's two parents apart who love each other.
Yeah.
Then those other two together and dislike each other and apart and dislike each other are actually both, there's no better one.
They're the same.
And you know, the research shows that kids who grow up in toxic homes and toxic divorce have a negative impact, of course. Mm. But there are people who go through healthy divorces where the children are positively impacted by this loving departure. And to me, it's like, if you're going to stay together for the kids, clean up your shit. Mm. But don't stay together and not do anything about it and just sit in resentment and build a prison around your morose behavior and then call yourself a victim to society and they make you stay. No one makes you stay. Choose to actively take responsibility for your life.
And like choose bravery.
Oh my gosh, and don't get me wrong. So super easy to say into a microphone.
Totally.
But hey, I've had very hard relationships and not with children. This is not coming from a judgmental space. This is coming from like a human development experience and space.
And it comes from experience of doing really hard, uncomfortable things and knowing in your bones that this is actually the best thing moving forward long term. But right now, it's terrifying, and I do not want to do this with my whole body.
Oh, yeah.
I will do anything to avoid this conversation.
Having hard conversations.
Whatever. But, like, there's a knowing, there's a whisper that's like, hey, we know what needs to be done.
I think that comes back to what you said at the beginning, which is we know the answer, but we don't like it. So then we read more books.
Yeah.
You know, we do more of a deeper dive, and we wait. We're waiting for someone to give us permission. Mm-hmm. But then we don't even like that, so we pretend that it wasn't what we were looking for permission for.
What if we give this person listening right now permission? What would you say to them?
Well, I think everyone is stuck in some form of prison of a why in the road of a choice.
Yeah.
And look, you might think it's the wrong choice. You said this at the conference we were just speaking at together, that there are no wrong choices. There are none. All of them just create more information. So if you choose something and then you say, oh my God, that was the wrong choice. You didn't know that before you chose it. So you actively gained more information of how your intuition works and how your body works and what your gut says and what are good choices and when these situations and scenarios have these influences and things going on, this is the right choice to make in that moment.
Yeah.
Great.
It's like you learn to make right choices by making wrong choices.
Yes, exactly. And that's what makes both of them not right or wrong.
Yeah.
It makes them the same.
Yeah.
And I know that can sound contrived, but it's not. Is that whatever you're waiting to hear, you are the authority of your life. And I think we are, because we don't tend to grow up, we stay sort of frozen in our child experience of looking for other people to validate what is true for us. But man, that is creating sovereignty. That is individuating. That is adulting. Is actually saying, I don't need your fucking approval.
Yeah.
I don't need you to tell me. Mm-hmm. I tell me. Mm-hmm. And that is hard. Oh my gosh, it's so much easier to be a child and to be stuck in a child at 40.
Yeah. And like avoiding the decision doesn't make it better. Like that angst,
that's a choice.
That angst lives in your soul. Like that anxiety.
My God. That's what makes us want to drink and
Hiding, you know. Hiding isn't healing.
Then we usually hiding is not healing. That's a great line, by the way.
Thanks.
You should write that down.
Okay. Or else I'll see it on Drake.
Mark Groves, great quote. but in that is like in that space of waiting is self-sabotage.
Yeah,
and like, often we'll blow up our lives so that we don't have to change it.
Mm-hmm.
So we like somehow we'll cheat, we'll lie, we'll do anything blow up the circumstances. Instead of saying that you can literally walk out the door, whatever that door is, you can walk in the door and choose a relationship. This isn't only about leaving things.
Yeah.
It just is often about leaving things. And I think most of us, I'm going to go with all of us, have to betray something to reclaim ourselves. And I don't mean betray in like cheat. I mean betray in like betray a system, betray someone we love, betray a story, betray to reclaim oneself. And that is the greatest and most empowering decision we'll ever make. And that will put us in this space of quote unquote being home within ourselves.
Yeah.
And that.
It's like if you want that line about if you want what you've never had, you've got to do what you've never done. And so if you flip that a bit and it's like ask the person out at the gym, start the business, like attract great things into your life, you have to betray the old stories operating in your head. You have to betray the limiting beliefs that are keeping you small that aren't even fucking true. You have to step into that new identity in the same way that you have to betray the other side of that when you leave things or remove things from your life that aren't serving you.
I heard, I 100% agree. I heard, yeah, cool. Stamp that.
Cute story. I heard, okay, now can I talk?
No, but I want to further that of, I heard Alan Watts say that a memory only continues to be valid when we keep choosing based on it in the current moment.
Ooh.
And that it only, like, the belief we cultivated, the whatever it is that we cultivated from an experience, only continues to stay alive through its perpetual influence on who we are today.
That's interesting.
Right. And exactly what you were saying, like, the pattern doesn't change till we do. Then you will still keep getting the same life circumstances and the same outcomes till you do something different. And you do have to betray the part of you that gets defensive.
Yeah.
You have to betray the things that are protecting you from getting hurt. Mm-hmm. To get love. Like, that's because on the other side of where you perceive hurt is also love, which is not to say you shouldn't curate and protect yourself. You should you should start to learn about who you allow in and who you don't.
What do you think are some core stories that often lead to self-betrayal?
No one will love me. I'm not lovable. Nothing works out for me. They're all victim stories, really. Which
I can't do hard things.
Yeah, no one. Who's going to listen to me? Mm. You know, who's going to believe me? Who's going to, you know, the imposter syndrome. I'm going to fail. I'm going to succeed. Like, what happens if everything does happen the way I want? Then what? I don't know. I don't have the tools to do that.
Equally as confronting, because you've never been there either.
Yeah, I'm like so good at actually staying average. Why the fuck would I want to be big or have a voice or be loud or take up space or... Like, your self-worth has to be cultivated to expand into the space you've never been. And that's a
powerful one. And it's a head fuck, because if you accept that you are potentially worthy of that success and adoration and abundance, you have to then also recognize that all of the beliefs and foundational thoughts that you have about yourself are false. That you've been living on a throne of lies, Will Ferrell says, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's hard. And, like, none of this stuff that we're talking about is necessarily like, oh, now that I'm hearing this podcast, I can just do all these things. It's like, no, you're going to be uncomfortable. You're not going to want to do some of this stuff. It's
going to be hard. You're going to have to betray it. You're going to have to betray unworthiness.
Yeah.
You're going to have to betray safety. You're going to have to betray comfort. Mm-hmm. And that is when you think about just simply asking yourself the question, if I did love myself, what would I do? Well, now what? Now what? It's like when someone says to me, I'm a bad communicator. And I'm like, say I'm a good communicator. And they're like, I'm a good communicator. And I'm like, now what? Now what do you have to do? Like, you can't be reactive anymore. Mm-hmm. You have to actually say what you feel.
Yeah.
Like, everybody generally has the skills to be a good communicator.
Totally. And everybody generally knows what the fuck they're supposed to be doing with their life. Like, one of the greatest tricks for being a life coach is, well, I don't know what to do. Like, what do you think you should do? I don't know what to say. What do you think you should say?
Yeah, just keep
like,
turning
deep down,
around.
You know, like, if you were brave, what would you do? If you knew that it was going to work out for you, what would you do?
If you had your best interest in mind, if you were the authority of your life,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's this ways that we keep subcontracting our decision making to other people so that we don't grow up.
Yeah.
And that.
Where are you, where are you hiding currently? Where is an area that you think?
Well, I'm literally hiding in cabins and where is a place that I'm currently hiding?
Or some form of like self-betrayal that you're kind of playing with at the moment.
Well, I think that my work is really expanding, you know, where it began in relationship and really from a very passionate space of like wanting to teach that work, it has really started to move towards. I mean, it's always been centered around understanding oneself, connecting to oneself, connecting to the truth. And now that is like just becoming a central theme of it, that relationship is a path to that. Bankruptcy is a path to that. Not knowing what my purpose is a path to that. So I feel like my work is shifting. I don't want to say I'm hiding in it because I'm not. I'm just letting it figure it out. Like I'm sort of
transitioning through it.
Yeah, like letting the pieces show themselves because I don't actually know yet. And so where am I hiding?
Like, do you have posts or projects or things where you're like, I'd really love to do that, but that's not relationship. That doesn't fit in my brand or that doesn't...
No. No, I mean, like, I really, I don't care, like, if it fits or doesn't. Like, the idea, like, someone said to me once, I feel that you're more spiritual than you let on because of your brand. And I'm like, apparently you don't know me, because I actually don't hold back. I could give a shit if someone's like, that's too spiritual. I'm like, then I'm not for you. I don't even know what too spiritual means anyways. Yeah. Like, if I smell like patchouli, then I'm in a different place. That'll never happen.
You just, somebody right now is listening being like, oh man.
That smells so bad. I know. It smells bad. I'm sorry.
For you.
For me. But for someone else, it's the best pheromone they've ever smelled.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know who that is, but it's a great smell for someone.
Yeah.
So, where
else?
In the
same way that your Instagram is like, a great place for some people and patchouli for others.
Oh, for sure it is. Last week had 5,000 people unfollow me. So that's, and I had 12,000 people follow me. Yeah. So that's the, like, it shows you. Someone said to me, like, you lose that many people a week. Oh, on a good week, I can lose 8 to 10. Yeah. So it's, but I gain more because, so yeah, there's not, you know, like a negative influx. And I remember when I used to lose like 12, you know, when I first started, I'd be like, oh my God, I went from like 700 to 688.
Well, that's the thing is, like, you notice when you first start, like, you notice the negative comments, you notice the unfollows, the unsubscribe, they sting a little bit more because there's fewer of them.
Well, and it's vulnerability and sharing that is so out there for the first time that now I am so used to a troll. Yeah. I'm so used, they still hit me.
Yeah, but you're like, when you start, you're like this baby giraffe gingerly walking through the plane, and like these lions just come over and push you over. Right?
Just fucking, like, oh, take a bite out of you.
I'm just starting, right? And then you get to be, I don't know what the equivalent would be, Mufasa or whatever.
Yeah, that's great.
And you're like all these hyenas, and you're like, get fucked, like, I'm the king of the jungle.
Well, yeah, you sort of feel like now it's just that my self-worth isn't attached to their opinions. It doesn't mean that it's still... Like, I have to say that when I experience feedback on something I wrote that was impactfully poor because of my wording, I feel the pain of that because I didn't intentionally mean to hurt someone or for it to be perceived a certain way. So I do listen to those things, but it is it's a growing of our self-worth to be like, hey, this is what I think and this is what I believe about the world. And for other people to go, I don't believe that. And I'm like, great.
Okay. Good for you.
Like, neither of us are wrong. And that, I think, is so sort of like a beautiful extrapolation of what it means to be in love with someone is your world and my world, we might see this conversation differently, but both of them are valid. And that's why I don't see, like, someone else's view of, like, an extreme Christian versus my view. Yeah. Neither of us are wrong.
Yeah, and I think that's where, in my own experience, a lot of conflict arises in relationship dynamics is you're both right. Like, you having an argument or a discussion or a fight, and you're both right.
And what a different way to see it.
Yeah. You hurt me. Yeah, you're right. And I didn't mean to hurt you. And then that just cycles through. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And that in those two worlds being allowed to coexist is the opportunity to understand each other's worlds and then agree on something or disagree. Yeah. But that being okay, that, like, the idea that our worlds have to amalgamate, and I mean, that's codependency, that you have to see the world the way I see. And, you know, I think the only really important thing in love is to have similar values. Mm. And probably some shared activities.
What do you think are, like, core values that would be helpful to look for or to facilitate?
Well, look, mental and emotional health, physical health. I mean, I think these just are core human values.
Standard, huh?
Yeah, like
curiosity.
Humility. So, like, when they look at the research, the two most important qualities in a relationship partner, looking back, are generosity and kindness. Mm. I personally would add to that humility. The ability to admit one is wrong or possibly wrong and flawed.
Yeah.
Because we all are, and we are often wrong. And the other one is curiosity as to what is going on in your partner's world. How are they changing? What are they interested in? And how can I contribute? How can I act on this humility with curiosity to understand how to be better? And I think that is demonstrating both kindness and generosity for oneself and for the other person. And Yeah, I personally think that integrity is the number one core value that all humans should live by, and integrity being that, are you living in alignment with what you say matters to you?
And who you truly are, perhaps.
Yeah, like, you can't say trust and honesty are one of my core values, and then not tell your partner how you feel about everything. Mm. And I know some people say there are, like, some truths they don't need to know. Like, if you are beside them and their armpit stinks, you don't need to tell them that their armpit stinks. But that's not going to hurt anything. Like, but, like, yo, you got some BO kicking. Yeah. You might want to give it a spritz. Yeah, that's okay. Put some patchouli on that.
I don't want to spend 40 years with somebody that stinks.
No, and you know what I mean, though, that there's, like, some things that they say, I don't necessarily agree with this, but that we don't need to tell them everything we think. Right. That's true. That's but, you know, I did read an interesting article that said, like, if your partner says, like, do I look fat in this, mm-hmm. that if you don't tell them the truth, you're actually doing them a disservice. Mm. And I was like, that's an interesting way of saying about it. Instead of saying, like, yes, you do look fat in that, you could say, like, you know what? You might look better in this today. Like, but man, are we not so afraid of their feelings?
Yeah.
We're protecting them from a way they feel about themselves.
That walking on eggshells, though, it's so tricky. Like,
oh, man, it's like being set up for, like, a what's the right answer.
I feel like it's just chronic stress or pervasive anxiety when you're trying to judge how your life is going to always impact your partner.
That's codependency.
And trying to tailor your responses to how they might feel.
Well, and you can't do that.
Sounds exhausting.
Well, that's taking responsibility for someone else's feelings.
Yeah.
You can't do that. You'll lose yourself doing that.
But then it goes back to, like, if you prioritize honesty as one of your highest values, right, then you should be able to say, look, like, being honest, like, I love you, and, like, yeah, I think you've maybe gained a little bit of weight.
Yeah, man, right. But that is such a sensitive thing.
It hurts me to say that
sentence. Right?
Yeah, I'm like, oh.
Well, especially because body is attached to so much shame. And not to mention that we have, you know, like, body positivity movements. And that's a very sensitive subject.
Yeah, but it
filled with mines and grenades and, landscaping here.
I feel like relationship is a minefield in some sense. But if you can't talk about that, then perhaps it would bleed into other areas, which is like, hey, did you hurt me? Or like, hey, that thing that you said made me feel this way. And it's like a slippery slope towards hiding.
Well, and as values aspects. Are changing too. Like, if health and fitness were a value when you started together, and for one of us it has changed, it is really the commitment to each other. You know, Jim Rome has that great quote that I used to say, I'll take care of you for me. But now I say, I take care of me for you, and you take care of you for you.
Say that again.
I'll take care of me for me. You, and you take care of you for me.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
That's self-love, right. Self-preservation.
That, like, the expansion of the relationship is through expansion of self. Mm. And that you can never minimize your own growth for someone else. If you do that, not will you only dim your light, but, you know, as Tony Robbins says, when you're not growing, you're dying. And that is the beginning of the end, is the moment you suppress your own expansion. Mm. And then you'll resent your partner because you'll be doing it for them, even though they might not have asked you to, or they did ask you to and you listened. Whew, that's a, you know... That's, you're going to break up. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
If your partner says to you, let's go to therapy, let's read this book, let's do this thing, and you say no, one, it's a good question for the partner to say, what is holding you back from actually doing that thing? And then listening to your boundary, your thought, your process. I'm afraid the therapist is going to tell me I suck, that some things are wrong with me, which probably means there are some things going on. But the other side of it is, if you don't go on that adventure or that thing, you will likely be left.
Would you say, is that a relationship red flag if your partner does not want to read the book, listen to the podcast, go to therapy?
Well, I think the first thing is, because I said that to Julie Gottman once, and she was like, no, Mark. I was like, that's the beginning of the end. And she was like, oh my God, no, Mark. She was like, that's actually just an invitation to be curious. Mm. Why don't you want to read the book? She's like, a partner is allowed to not want to read a book.
Yeah.
And I was like,
I've certainly been that guy.
Yeah.
Don't tell me what to do.
Yeah, exactly. Then resist, you know.
Yeah.
You'd now be told as a kid that you have oppositional defiance disorder. Yeah. But I think it just is this invitation to curiosity, which is, why don't you want to? As opposed to, you don't want to because you don't love me or you don't care. That's the meaning we give it. Mm. Instead of being like, why don't you want to? What is holding you back? What would make you feel more comfortable? How could we step towards this? But if you don't actually do the work to reconnect or work through it, you will lose that person eventually. That's just how it works.
Yeah. Fair enough.
How far are we?
We're like, I don't know, done.
All right. Done-ish. We're done-ish? Sweet.
Any final words of wisdom? It's been an hour and 9 minutes.
That feels like a pretty good time.
That went fast.
Yeah.
69 minutes.
Starting to get introverted. How? Any final words of advice?
Yeah, like what do you... what's like the most powerful thing you've learned in the last year? Summed up in a fortune cookie.
The most powerful thing I've learned in a year. Oh,
summed up in a fortune cookie.
I would say it is the unpredictability of life. Just learn that to flow with it, to not try to resist the changes that come through you, and to just embrace them. Oh my God, that is so hard to do though. And it has been such a gift to be reminded of the spectrum of my feelings. I think I was getting a little comfy, you know? And
we all do.
Yeah. But I think to dive within oneself, that...
like get curious, go inward.
Explore. Yeah, to just ask yourself that question and let yourself, who am I? And go down that rabbit hole.
Yeah, and I think also just to add to that, creating the space consciously to have some stillness. Like go for a walk alone if you can, even for 10 minutes. Sit quietly with your eyes closed and just breathe.
Like, without your fucking phone, without a meditation, without a podcast, without an audiobook.
Or an intention even. Just fucking chill.
That's that quote that I told you really hit me. That one that silence is who you are. Mm. And that one just has resonated with every cell in my body that it is that. Everything arises from it. And that... I never thought I'd ever say something that Eckhart Tolle probably says.
Mm.
But here I am.
We're getting old.
That is your pain body. We are getting old. So, and it's a beautiful gift to get older, a privilege denied to many. That's a quote from someone, I forget who.
It's good.
Yeah, not me.
Every day is a gift, right?
Every day. Let go and let God.
Mr. Groves, I just love you, man. You've been a huge inspiration to me through the years, and I just adore and appreciate your friendship so much. You are at Create the Love. What's your website?
markgroves.tv, like television.
.tv?
Yep.
What's the deal with that? Why?
.com was gone. I now own it, but it hasn't been fully developed.
markgroves.tv?
Yeah, if you just Google Mark Groves, you'll find me. Yeah.
And,
I think there's a cop named Mark Groves, but he's pushed to like page 5 or something.
Yeah. I feel like... All right, man.
Dude, thanks so much for having me. Brother. You mean so much to me. And your friendship and ability to tell the truth to me is always a beautiful... I think that's one thing anyone should learn, is find friends who tell you the truth at the risk of not being liked by you. That is always a gift. Mm. I don't like it in the moment often, but it always resonates back to me, something I already know. So thank you. I love you. And thanks for doing this podcast with me.
Back at you, brother. You smashed it.
I mean, seriously, how good was that? That dude is such a gem, just a wellspring of knowledge and insight and clarity. I just adore that man. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. And again, I would encourage you to peruse the old episodes. See if a name jumps out. See if a question grabs you by the heart and gives you a little shake. Find Mark online at markgroves.tv. Check out his courses online. They're amazing. His podcast is also really good. And you can find him on Instagram at createthelove. And if you don't do that, like, you're doing Instagram wrong. The dude is a genius. He has so much good content. Highly recommend that you do follow him. And that's it. I love you. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the 5-star reviews. Thanks for sharing with the people in your life that you think could benefit from this knowledge and experience. I adore you. I think you're wonderful. Keep shining bright, you big, shiny gem of a human. That's exactly what the world needs more of. It's you. Yeah. So there's that. You can find me on Instagram at longdistancelovebombs or longdistancelovebombs.com. Got events, retreats, a book, a podcast, all the good things. That's it. Keep smiling. Go live your best life.